You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
How are you feeling after that, Matt?
I feel a lot better than Bob.
Extra Time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
You guys are the experts. You'll probably have to analyze that.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from Kansas City, Missouri, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental. From my basement, I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, David Goss, Matt Doyle. Oh, it's going to be a good show today, guys. I'm feeling it. We were a little distracted in the rundown meeting, but we had moments of brilliance. And I feel like once we get into the actual thing, those things are going to pay off. We have Garth Lagerwey on today's show. Some news in Sounders world. Brian Schmetzer, he remains the head coach. We all knew that was coming. Jordan Morris, he did not play for Swansea, but he is there. And Chris Henderson had gone. And we didn't really talk a ton about that stuff. So it's time to talk to Garth about what's going on in Seattle and what's going around the league. He always has a great perspective there. But our producer, Anders, reminder of the day is, good night, David Akam, you sweet prince. Your Dark Horse MVP award will live on in our hearts.
Not going to lie, he's actually increased the dark horse nature of his MVP bit because he won't even be playing in the league.
Yeah, it's even harder now.
Yeah.
But
so he's upped his own game.
We're not getting rid of that.
I think we should retire that award.
You think so?
Yeah. And I don't know. Like, at this point, aren't we just beating a dead horse?
No.
Wow, what?
That's the disrespect for...
Back for David Akam.
Yeah, and for Bobby Warshaw's legacy.
Hammerby fans, come out here. Get in those men's shoes.
He is on loan to Hammerby.
Join with the FBL squad.
So headed back to Sweden. We all know a little something about Hammerby. So good luck to David Akam. Look, the Dark Horse MVP was always about Bobby's take. Mm-hmm. Was almost not at all about David Akam. It was about Bobby reaching.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, all right, he had a bad take. It was a few years ago.
Fine. We'll put it to the listeners. 401-206-0MLS. Before we get to,
is Doyle has a list of his bad takes he would like to represent to be named the awards, because we got to replace it. So we can either keep beating on Bobby or we can line one of us up.
I mean, I did have Chicharito winning the Golden Boot last year.
There you go.
That was a pretty bad one.
I believe I was on that bandwagon as well. Yeah. I want to say I guaranteed 20 plus in
I
the
know
intro
he's
column.
I guarantee him low this year and he's going to crush it. That's the part I'm waiting for. We guarantee him like 8 minus goals for Chicharito. It just won't work. Then he scores 7 in the first month.
Right. We've focused enough on our bad takes. Let's talk about the U.S. national team. Trinidad and Tobago, this is the payoff for January camp. So tune into that one. We're thinking about it, trying to wrap our mind around it. I'm not going to lie. I have not followed this January camp as I have in others past. I followed the headlines, the news coming out of it. But for me, these things are hard. I want to see. It's hard to just stay engaged when I'm just thinking about what it might be. So now we get to find out what it might be. What do you think Doyle, Greg Berhalter, is trying to get out of this? What has he gotten out of this camp that we haven't seen, that we haven't been a part of, that we'll see a little bit of against TNT?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about what January camps are traditionally for, it's less about getting your first team players, and it's more about getting guys on the fringe to see individually if they could push into that first team. And there have been, you know, really good January camp performances in the past that have propelled guys forward. Aaron Long a few years ago was a good example of that. And it's especially that is kind of magnified now because we have so many of our best players in some of the biggest teams in the world in Europe. And like, that's our first team. Christian Pulisic, Weston McKennie, Tyler Adams, you know, John Brooks, Serginho Dest, like those are our first team guys. So the players in this camp, they're not going, for the most part, they're not here to try to prove they're one of the, you know, they're a starting level player. They're trying to prove that they are, like, put me in the game day 23. I am a part of this 23-man roster, and they're trying to, like, they're jostling with each other. So that's, from a broader picture perspective, that's what you're looking at. And, like, from a team perspective, we kind of know how Greg Berhalter wants to play. Now, he's tinkered with it a little bit, right? And we've seen kind of a 4-2-3-1 come in over the past year. Against El Salvador last time out, it was very much a 4-3-3. We've seen a team that was originally kind of a mid-block 4-4-2 in defense go to kind of a high-pressing 4-3-3. That was against Wales, against Panama, and against El Salvador. I'm curious to see a little bit of that, but it's less for team reason and it's more for personnel reasons. Because last time out against El Salvador, Jackson Ewell was very much just sitting deep as a regista, except for the times where he pushed up and had to press. And it's like, that's not Jackson Ewell's game. He's never been a pressing six. It's Tyler Adams' game. And that's where Tyler Adams played in the previous two games. That's exactly how he played. And Ewell did okay with it. He had some really good moments, including creating the second goal. But he had a couple of bad moments where he was a step and a half late, and that could have led to breakouts against a better team. So I'm curious to see if, on a team-wide level, if Berhalter keeps committing to that. But I don't think anything from it will be definitive. It's more about the guys on the roster just like going out there and proving that they are, or trying to prove that they are better than the guys that they're competing against for these roles. And then there is an added layer here, which is Olympic qualifying. Olympic qualifying's in 2 months, and a lot of these guys are U23s. A lot of them, you know, Daryl DK, Jackson Ewell, Jonathan Lewis made it. Sam, like a lot of these guys are eligible and are likely going to be at the heart of the team. And so it's almost like a tryout for that team as well.
And I like the idea, because I agree with Doyle. I think the number one thing you're looking at is individual performances. Who can elevate their game? Who can show they can play at this level? Who has shown? Because the whole thing is the 11 that rolls out there, that's who Greg Berhalter's been watching for the last month and been impressed by. So that's what we're going to get is, what's Greg Berhalter's impression of where these players stand. The other thing we've talked about a lot, especially with this year, is what does your style look like away in CONCACAF when you don't have your best players? What does your style look like in a group stage Gold Cup game when you're not starting your number one best 11? And so that's kind of the things maybe we'll see in this, almost like an early season MLS game where it's like, well, the coach wants to know he has this club in his bag for later on down the road if he needs to use it. Not this is the style that Tab Ramos wants to play, and he's going to use it for the next 9 months. So I think we'll see a little bit of that. But to Doyle's point, the way I think about it is probably from 06 to 2011, you had heavy European USMNT 11s. And so the January camps were which players show that they can push into that group. And I think for a lot of players, and we've talked about this, I think Charlie even brought it up, even though he was in Europe, for a lot of players, that first time into camp is like, oh, I can play at this level, or I can elevate myself to another level. And I think there's a number of guys in this group who we think have that potential. And right. So now's a chance for them to show, oh, I can get to that next stage. And we're going to talk about my 11, but one of them is Aaron Herrera. I thought he's been a national team guy. He hasn't gotten a shot. Now there's a rumor of a chance in Europe. Is this a stepping stone for him to say, I can play at the national team level, push into Europe, and then sort of compete at that right back spot because I'm a starter in Europe?
A lot of transitional guys, a lot of foothold guys. I mean, I go through the roster. Matt Turner's not necessarily that. This is his second opportunity, growth from last year in January, and he's been one of the big stories because he will almost certainly, you would think, get the start in this group. So a chance to say, hey, put me in that top three and keep me there and maybe even let me compete for the top spot. But then you have guys like Tanner Tessman, who's just like, hey, here's his taste. Mm-hmm. Prove it, man. Like, you started to do it MLS. Prove it. So who are you watching? Who are the players as you go through this roster as it stands now? And there have been a lot of chops and guys that have left for injury or for moves. It was unfortunate to see Tristan Blackman leave because of a concussion, go back to LAFC. Who is the guy in this camp right now that you're watching or you'll be looking at on Sunday when we watch this game at 7 p.m. and say, I just want to see it from him. I hope I see it from that guy.
You want to go first, David?
Well, I have a full 11, so I don't know.
Well, give us your 11 in a second. Maybe you can cherry pick. Maybe you can cherry pick a little bit out of there and be like, okay, you want Herrera. Is it Herrera or is it a different guy?
No, I'll say DK. I mean, I want to see him start at center forward. I want to see him get the opportunity to kind of like lead the line for this team. And I want him to sort of show that he's in this pool, both for himself, because I want him to play for the U.S. So if he has a good game, you feel like that's the vibes you want for a guy to say, yeah, this is where I want to spend my future. And then on the flip side, because it's still an open position, and I think he has the potential to fill that spot. And so I think that's the most – or that's the one position where you may be looking at a guy who could start for the best 11 going forward.
Yeah, that's the right answer. Josie is there as well, and seeing what Josie has left in the tank is going to be very interesting throughout 2021. But it's a pretty open competition to be his successor. And this is no disrespect to Josie Zardes, who has actually been very good for the national team when he's played center forward. But I think the hope is that at least one of Josh Sargent, Matthew Hoppe, Nico Joachini, Sebastian Soto, Io Akinola, or Daryl DK. I would also throw Jeremy Obobese in that group, but he got cut. He didn't make this final roster, which is a tough one. Ricardo Pepi, who I think is going to be too young. But the hope is that one of those guys is going to be able to show that they're at a high, they can be Josie's successor, and they're at a higher level than Josie, and they can distinguish themselves from the rest of that crop of forwards who are all like 2000, born in 2000 or 2000 young, 2001. So they're very young. If you look at the way the number nine has played for Berhalter, like, he has asked guys to drop back and link up. And if you watch the patterns of play, as the center forward drops, then either the wingers go or you get those bursting runs out of central midfield. Brendan Aaronson made a million of them against El Salvador. The Jets been good at them as well. He scored a goal off of one of them against El Salvador. DK can do that. I would argue, like, other than Josh Sargent, DK probably has the highest upside as a comeback into the midfield, drag defenders with him, and link up forward out of that entire group. The question I have with DK is he going to be a natural goal scorer? Like, does he have the same types of predatory instincts that we've seen from Hoppe and, obviously Josie has him, Io Akinola, Soto, all those guys just find chances. And I'm not sure yet that DK is as good as that. If he comes out there and drops, you know, a brace like Soto and Giocchini did in there.
I mean, I was just letting you go on each one of them, just sort of filing it away, being like, all right, okay, all right.
Yeah. Every time I pronounce it differently every single time. But if he can drop a brace, I think that's he's making a statement like, okay, I'm at least at the same level as you guys.
I think the competition at outside back is interesting because there are basically five guys across both positions. I mean, you mentioned Herrera, but if you're talking about right back, Kyle Duncan, he's more of a U23 play there. But Julian Araujo is in this camp. Probably the same thing for him, but that starting spot might tell us something and maybe who's on the bench. And then on the flip side, I think left back too, Vines and Bello. You know, Vines is 2 years older. Bello, the Atlanta United fans are coming at me because I didn't say I was rooting for him, but I feel like his career is on this pretty good trajectory as it stands. So after a month of seeing them,
you knew when you signed up to write a 10-person article that the 11th
you know what?
Player,
just be happy it's not a best 11. So, all right, people, just be happy it's not a best 11. I thought about making it one, it's not the way we went down. But, yeah, I think those two positions, who did he say, as you said, Doyle, basically, like, over this month, who did it? Who impressed me the most? Who earned the opportunity? Who do I look at after all these training sessions and time spent together and say, I have to put you on the field because of what you did. I mean, that's part of the culture that Greg said he was trying to bring in and seems to have brought in. So how about this? Let's get that 11. Let's get it. Just knock it out. Knock it out. What do we got?
Okay. Just roll straight through it. I'll go in lines. Goalkeeper, Matt Turner, I think fairly obvious, has earned it. Is not Olympic eligible, could be overage going into that. But he's the guy who deserves to start a national team game, and in this situation with no Zach Steffen and all that, this is his opportunity. Back four, I mentioned Aaron Herrera at right back with the links to Benevento coming out. This is a guy that I think can play at that level, so this is his opportunity to do it. Center back pairing, I'm going to go Miles Robinson and Aaron Long, and then left back Sam Vines. I want to see Miles Robinson bounce back from what was just a tough year for everyone in Atlanta, including him, and show that he's still on the path, similar to a Mark McKenzie, to be an elite center back, at right center back. And then Aaron Long, now the rumors coming out, he might go to England, might not. He had a, let's just say, terrible year in New York, maybe year and a half for him. So can he find his feet again and show that he's versatile, playing left and right center back, which is key for what he can do, and his ability to pass the ball and control the game at times alongside maybe an inexperienced center back here in Miles Robinson, and then Sam Vines, who I think George Bello has a higher ceiling, and what Bello can do is different than what Vines can do, his ability on the ball and the way he can create. But I see Sam Vines as the potential to be just a solid left back that will never lose you a game. He has the physicality to play at the international level already. And this year, his game developed offensively, getting to the end line a little bit more for Colorado. So this is a huge opportunity for him. And I think he's shown he's not a guy that wows you, but every time he plays at a higher level, he always hangs. And then can he get better and better as he gets more opportunities? Midfield three, Jackson Yule and Christian Roldan in two behind Sebastian Legette. Doyle talked about what Jackson Yule can do and what they want to see him do. What I like about this pairing is it gives me an idea kind of Roldan to Weston McKennie of a roaming eight alongside a true six. How does he find the game? How does he create opportunities? And for Roldan, he's just trying to prove that he deserves to be a part of the roster. And then a front three of Chris Mueller,
oh, man. Daryl you, TK. I knew Jesus you were going to go with Jesus. I was waiting. I was going to jump in.
Wait, where do you have Ferreira?
On the left side. So what I love is Sebastian Legette loves to go take that left side spot as a number 10. You see it with the Galaxy. He's done it with the U.S. as well. So Ferreira comes and floats inside and gets opportunities where he can be that link-up pass. The little slip ball into Mueller coming off that right side, fullbacks coming down the wings, as well as into DK's feet. That's where I see all of them fitting up. And I think Mueller obviously earned it against El Salvador. We talked about DK already. And I think last show we mentioned who were the U20 guys or U23 guys that we're rooting for. And Jesus Ferreira needs
can I
to
say,
back
and this is a confidence boost you have to think for guys to spend a month here with their peers to sort of feel like, okay, I'm outside my normal environment. Can I go back to that environment and thrive again? But come on, if Josie's healthy and he was good in this camp, do you start him, right? Like, and not just because.
That's
like a reward.
I have no
it's
problem.
A reward.
Yeah,
it's
I have like no problem with Josie start. I also think after what he's been through, I understand seeing what he can still do at this level, but I know what Josie Altidore can give me. Mm. So to me, this is a let's learn stuff camp. Josie Altidore doesn't need that reward. He knows the level he's at. He's in a camp with Greg Berhalter. They're talking every day. He doesn't need what Jesus Ferreira needs of that confidence at the end of this camp to show I'm on the right path. And I want to see what DK can do. If Josie Altidore is healthy and playing consistently and all of that is what's happening in Toronto, then he's on a U.S.
All
national
right, Sunday,
team roster, and he's fighting for a
7 p.m. Eastern, FS1, Unimas, TUDN, TNT, U.S. national team. There's a 25-player roster. We'll see who the winners are. We'll see what that means for the rest of this year. Always some standouts, always some talking points. We're going to look to speak to Greg Berhalter next week on this show. Extra time, driven by Continental. So tune in for that one. We'll let you know when it's coming. Let's keep it rolling here before we get to Garth Lagerwey and dive a little bit into Jordan Morris and so many other news bits in Seattle. At Swansea, different player, Paul Arroyo. I guess he's not at Swansea. He's still in U.S. camp, but he's talking about Swansea, and other people are as well. DC, what should they do? And if they do this, who's the winner? And then what do they do on the field? Well, let's start with the winner. Who would be the winner of this move if Paul Arriola goes to Swansea? Other than Paul Arriola, I mean, I think he would be.
Everyone's a winner in this situation. For DC, they brought in Julian Gressel, who does the same things as Paul Arriola. And now they've got a guy on a DP who they can replace already internally and then open up a DP spot to go fill with whatever needs they have under a new coach in Hernan Losada. For Paul Arriola, if he's ready to take that next step and he's getting playing time at Swansea, high level in the championship, maybe the Premier League, whatever it is over the next few years, that's a win for him. And if the team needs him and he fills in, then it's a fit in Europe as well. So I think this is a no-lose situation. And for DC, I think your fingers crossed that it works out for him. Because if he comes back, it is a little awkward how he fits into this lineup. I think it's awkward for a few pieces. And so it makes it easier for you, as my Vancouver jersey falls behind me, it makes it easier for you to just say, we're so happy, we're so excited for him. And you've got, what, 4 or 5 homegrowns that have pushed into your team? Yeah. Do you now put yourself in a market with European teams saying, come look at us, we have available players. Moses Nineman now, Jacob Green, now Griffin Yao. It just puts you in that conversation.
This is bad news for the Vancouver Whitecaps. Can I just ask that obvious question? I mean, their jersey just dropped behind you. That feels... Okay, that's fair. Okay, that jersey's for Diver. I feel that. Yeah, it just feels like this could work out for them. And also, I mean, isn't the ownership basically largely the same?
There's a connection there.
There's a logical there's a logical link between them.
It's going to be very difficult negotiations.
Back and forth. Jordan Morris, we know it's official now. I think we talked about on the show as if it was, but now it is. He was on the bench for a 1-1 draw against Brentford on Wednesday. Swansea went down to 10 men, and they made one sub. And that sub was not Jordan Morris, and that was heartbreaking for those of us who could not watch, but we're watching via, like, the Google updating box score, and we're just like, so when? So are they going to do it? Are they?
Also, forget Jordan Morris. They drew 1-1. They didn't win, and they didn't an extra sub,
two subs.
Down a man? I don't even care. I'm not even a Swansea fan. That doesn't make any sense from a soccer point of view. And the team played last weekend. And
if it's Jordan Morris, all the better. Just all the better for those of us that care. But somebody. Greg Berhalter said this about the move to Swansea. We have a good relationship with the coaching staff at Swansea. We had long conversations about what they want to achieve this year and how they're going to use Jordan. And I think he's going to be in good hands. That sounds good. That sounds like a positive sign. For Jordan Morris. We'll see what that means in the long run. But to start watching the game, getting settled in Swansea, some other news around, I guess he is a former Sounder in a way, but DeAndre Yedlin definitely is. He signed with Galatasaray because Newcastle forgot to register him, which has just got to be an awkward moment for everybody involved, really. I mean, you're like, you know, hey, we saw DeAndre, hey, man, like, ooh.
Hadn't he started like six of their previous seven games?
I mean, really?
He was out, and then he had basically locked down as a starter. And
awkward conversations all around. There's a team admin somewhere that had to go to an executive, that had to go to the coaching staff, that had to go to somebody else, that had to go to DeAndre's agent, that had to go to DeAndre to tell him, we screwed up. We really messed up. So, Galatasaray.
But we hear the weather in Istanbul this time of year is great.
On the Bosphorus, it's beautiful times, man. It's beautiful times. Who is it? We've had a bunch of stories from Turkey on here. I think Maurice Adu told stories on MLS Storytime. I think Brad Friedel told some pretty crazy old school stories as well.
It's made it sound less fun.
Yeah, a little more intense. DeAndre, I expect, will make this fun in some way. We'll see what the contract is for and what his role will be with Galatasaray. All right, let's get to Garth Lagerwey. He's the president of soccer. That's an enviable title for the Seattle Sounders. Garth, what's up, man? How's it going?
Doing all right, man. Trying to get through the pandemic like everybody else, and grateful that we're, you know, as a family, Sounders family, we've been safe and for the most part healthy so far.
So this has been a time of no change, a lot of consistency, certainly nothing different happening. Oh, wait, no, Jordan Morris is gone, and your right-hand man, Chris Henderson, is off to Inter Miami, and you did get a deal to bring back the coaching staff and Brian Schmetzer, so that's a bit of positivity on that side as far as consistency goes.
And a DP.
And a DP. Paolo. Yeah, got that done, kept him in the team. Where's your head out right now as you think about the Sounders in 2021 and everything that's happening around you?
It's the next step for us. You know, when you go on a run and you have some sustained success, and you know, we've been to four or five MLS Cups, and that's, you know, I think that's a we took a good shot at trying to build a dynasty, and inevitably in a salary cap league that's driven by parity, you have to recalibrate. And you know, we hit the salary cap wall, and you saw us at the end of last season have to move on from Gustav Svensson and Jovan Jones and Kelvin Leerdam, and you know, maybe there's some possibility that one of those guys is back yet, but you know, we have to plan as if they won't. And you know, it's been tough, you know, and it's, you know, I think the foundation for us is remains that we can contend so long as we have a spine of Steph Fry, Yamar Gomez-Andrade, JP, Christian Roldan, Nico Ladero, Raul Ruiz Diaz, and up until a couple of days ago, Jordan Morrison. You know, with Jordan, obviously, it was a cool opportunity for him. You know, this had been kind of the deal since he had signed with us originally and chosen the Sounders over Germany, was, you know, that if he wanted to go to Europe, we were going to accommodate him. And we believe we have, and we believe we sent him to a club in Swansea is going to take good care of him. And we've done it on a loan. So that's going to be inconvenient for us in the short term, but it's going to give Jordan, I think, a really cool opportunity over there and really good chance to see how things go. And certainly he's going to be, I would think, one of the more talented players in that league. And so let's see how he does. And it's a great opportunity for him, but it is going to be more upheaval for us. But we need to recalibrate around that core. And I like to think that, you know, with that core and some of the other guys we have in the team, you know, I like to think we're a playoff team. And then we just have to understand where our weaknesses are as we play a little bit. Hopefully we get some young players into the group. That's the one thing that that's kind of the last step for us in terms of being a complete franchise. And we think we have some talented youngsters that may be ready to play some role. And so let's see how that shakes out. And then in the summer, we can pivot as needed to see where we have needs.
You better believe I'm going to ask about the talented youngsters in a little bit. But first, I wanted to ask, obviously you're on this interview because of your representation with the Seattle Sounders. But as Garth Lagerwey, who grew up in the soccer community in this country, loves the game, the growth of this game, when you're going into this deal with Jordan Morris and being in this room, in the room and having these conversations, what do you think about in terms of what it means for American soccer and MLS and all those things? Do you have that on your mind? Are you looking at it and saying, this is a team that's about to get promoted? They want an immediate player now, and they're looking at Jordan Morris and the way maybe it's all changed over the last few years?
Look, there's been an explosion of American players doing well in Europe. And you know, as a former player myself, David, you know, certainly not somebody of my ability, but some of the guys I've played with, you know, were pretty good. And, you know, we felt going back to the late 90s that there were a bunch more guys that could play in Europe, you know, but they didn't have the opportunity. And so, I've said this in other places, but I give Greg Berhalter a ton of credit because he stuck with a core of young players and they honestly weren't very good at first, but he kept playing them. And that really has transformed the marketplace now. You know, we've had, because it's not one guy making it, right? This is like the Champions League conversations we've had on the show for years, right? It'd be great if somebody won one time, right? And I was rooting as hard as I could for LAFC this year. But what would really make a difference is if we're there every year and, you know, there's an MLS team that's, you know, on equal footing in every semifinal and you know, we're holding our own and winning half the time. And that's what I think we're seeing here is we're seeing now the floodgates begin to open and the American market finally start to get recognized, I think, for what it is. And look, I think part of it too was a lot of our posture here was, you know, we weren't as willing to sell players as maybe some other leagues were. So I think it's both, right? And what we want is to have a virtuous cycle where our players see us as a launching pad for other opportunities. But likewise, we make our league better by virtue of being a participant in that global marketplace, both buying and selling. And that raises then the level of MLS as well as the respect that MLS gets around the world. So I think we're on the right path. I think we're on the right, headed in the right direction. And so, David, to answer your question, I do think this is a really cool opportunity, but it's never going to be just about Jordan or just about one player. It's about the mass of players, can the bulk of players go over there and prove that we can be successful and that MLS is a good league.
What does it say to the GMs, to the chief soccer officers, to the owners, to the players around the league when you see guys like, it's not done yet, it's been going on forever here, but the Brian Reynolds reported transfer or the Caden Clark move where you're saying, and I know that's a little different, it's in the Red Bull structure, but you're saying guys that aren't multi-year starters, that aren't Jordan Morris best 11 MVP candidates, are realistic, sought-after players in the European market with very little first-team experience in MLS. Does that change the game for how we should be thinking about youth development, for how we should be thinking about the way teams are put together, the way we think about like where money comes from and how money is spent on transfers in the soccer side?
For sure. Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And you know, the single biggest driver, and this has been around for a while, is, you know, the number of minutes played by young players. That's what drives their value above anything else. That and then what's their participation in youth national teams, right? Specifically in World Cups. So most of those guys that you mentioned, they played in youth national teams and therefore have had a platform, you know, over and above even what their club team has been. So I do think that it's a really positive trend. And I do think it's something that, you know, that everybody has to take in mind. And look, one of the stigmas for a long time in playing young players was, you know, and I heard it always in terms of, well, Garth, that's really nice. That works at RSL. But, you know, if you're going to be an ambitious club, you know, you're going to contend, you can't do it. And then this year, Philadelphia Union come along and you know, congrats to Ernst and to Chris Albright there. You know, they're winning the Supporters Shield playing a core of young players, right? And Kansas City, you know, who I think is a club that's played young players, you know, Lucio probably most prominently. they're finishing first in the East and first in the West. And again, it's a little bit of a goofy season and it's unbalanced schedule and you could caveat it all you want. But at the end of the day, it's tough to make that argument now, like, oh, well, if you play your young players, then you're not going to do very well as a team. So it becomes now this kind of next level of, hey, it is more complicated to play young players, right? They need more structure around them. They need to have veteran players playing with them. There needs to be more of a set system often so that they're playing a role and they're not having to figure things out on their own. So you have to treat them differently, right? You can't play them for 45 minutes, yank them out, crush their confidence. You have to have a longer rope and a longer runway. And oftentimes when you're playing young players too, like when I talk about our talented youngsters, David, I actually don't want to say this one guy is going to play this one position and I think he's going to play. The formula, in fact, is probably more likely he's going to have a good month and then he may dip a little bit and then the next one is going to come in and play for a month and play really well. And so, again, it's a different way of looking at your team, and I do think that that's part of the evolution of the league. And I think, you know, as we look around, it's only something that's going to take greater hold. I mean, LAFC haven't yet sold their really good young foreign players, but at some point they will, right? And they will prove that model as well. So now they've gotten a Rodriguez, they've gotten a Rossi, and they've made their ownership group money. And that's a different model than what we've seen before as well. So I think there's a whole bunch of interesting stuff going on in the league. And as always, it's evolve or die, right? I mean, that's what pro sports is. So I think it's a really interesting time to be in this.
Since we're already here, I got to ask the question then. So you talk about your young players.
I wasn't going to stand
anywhere. Obviously, I cover a lot of the youth levels. And one of the things you did was you came into Seattle and you expanded where you were looking for players. And you started to pull players from markets outside of the Seattle area. And some of the major soccer markets, I know Vegas, Florida, Northern California, things like that. Those players had success at a youth level. They haven't pushed through to that first team yet. Are you worried that the work you did in establishing pipelines to these areas is maybe going to fall to the wayside because you haven't shown that you can get them that professional level play and then even that next move?
Look, I mean, there's some highlights here. You know, so let's take the baby steps, right? Because you got to walk before you run. Henry Wingo was a guy that we couldn't figure out how to break through, right, and stuff. And look, and we had, again, like, this is the conundrum, right? We had a really good right back in Kelvin Leardom, a guy who was had played in the Champions League in Europe, and you know, did all he did was score the goal that opened up the game to win us the MLS Cup, and played in two other MLS Cup games for us in his 4 years with us. So not a bad player. But we got Wingo out, and mm-hmm. he went to Molde, and now he's with Ferencváros, and our club benefited from sell-ons there. And so we did find a path for Henry Wingo. Now, that path was Seattle, but we did find a path for him. You know, Henwala Buana was a kid, that was a really promising young kid for us, who I think is going to have a really bright future in Nashville. We couldn't work out how to get that one in the middle of a pandemic, and we couldn't move guys in between teams. So a lot of the development mechanisms weren't there last year that we normally rely upon. But we were able to get him out, and we were able to get him to a team where maybe he'd have a bigger opportunity. And we got back some money, and we got back Jimmy Madranda, who we yesterday announced that we signed to keep with the club, as a kid who did really well for us last year. So I think it's being creative, David. I think that's part of the answer here. But look, at some point, I don't think we're there yet, I don't think we're that close to there yet, but if at some point you simply never play anyone under the age of 22, then, in the modern world, like, everyone's going to see that. And where it's going to hurt you first is recruitment to the academy, right? It's the underlayer, right? Because you have to constantly restock this pipeline with talent. And we have in Henry Browner one of the preeminent recruiters in America. I mean, the guy is amazing. And the connections he has, the work he's done with U.S. Soccer. And we have in Chris Little, a guy who's being sought after even by first teams of other clubs and stuff in terms of leading our development. So we got the right people in charge there, and they've done a great job. This is part of supporting them as well. Supporting this project is now seeing if we can push some of those kids into playing within our first team. And look, ultimately, it'll be up to our coaching staff, right? I mean, like, again, you always want to be pragmatic and rational about this stuff. We played a 4-2-3-1 for a long time, right? But if Jordan's on loan for at least April and May, and, Ethan Doubleair maybe is the best prospect to start at that right wing. You could solve it a couple different ways, though, right? You could start Danny Leyva next to Joao Paulo, and you could put Christian on the right. You could start Josh Atencio in there. And this is what I mean. You want to have this flexibility, And look, maybe we go and we play a 3-5-2. And now we get Ethan Doubleheader on the field because as a wingback, as one of five, that's a little bit less responsibility than playing as one of three in a band of three. And, so there's a whole bunch of creative ways to solve that. Ultimately that'll be up to our coaching staff. And what we want to do is, as always, give the coaching staff options and not put them in a box and not say, this is what you have to do. This is the only option. We want to give them multiple ways to try and solve this, because ultimately then that allows them to react to, we don't want to gift player minutes, right? We don't want to just say, hey, we're stripping away all the talent around you, so therefore this is the only choice. That doesn't make any sense at all, right? All that's going to create the team. But if you have, again, the right structures and you have competition and you have multiple ways to solve this, right? And, Jimmy Madranda can play a couple different positions. We're going to announce a player later this week that can play a couple different positions. So you want to have that veteran cover, and then you got to hope that then the youngsters can push through and help over time.
Andrew, you can do the rest of the interview. Yeah. I got Josh Encio mentioned. I had Ethan Doubleheader. I got Danny Leyva. I'm done. I'm going.
It was like a runaway train. I wanted to put my finger up because that's how we normally do the, like, oh, I'm next. But I knew that once you said young guys, Garth, that he was going directly there, and I couldn't get in the way. How about I do this? Who's harder for you to replace in your current job, Jordan Morris or Chris Henderson?
You know what's funny, man? You can make the argument they're both irreplaceable, right? I mean, we had DP level output from Jordan for the last 2 years. And structurally, when you have three DPs already, you know, JP, Nico, Raul, and again, those guys are all awesome. Wouldn't change a thing. But that means that if Jordan goes, you're going to replace him with a TAM level player in the short term. And who knows, there's talk around, could we have this young DP mechanism come in at some point? Maybe that changes your thinking. But under the current system, you're replacing with a TAM guy. And look, Jordan had a good wage and we'd get a bunch of allocation money. And so we would have options, but it would be a difficult thing to replace him. To step back, but again, long-term, in 2022, maybe you can find a structure where you can buy JP down that opens a spot up. So there are ways to solve that over time. The Chris Henderson one, I think, is interesting in a different way, in that Chris was at least arguably the best talent evaluator in the league. And it's the guy with 13 years of experience for the Sounders. So again, if you come into this and be like, we're good, that's just dumb. I mean, that's naive, right? To pretend you're just going to move on and it's no big deal. Let me say this though. I mean, nobody was more deserving of a first team shot to run the whole show than Chris Henderson. I mean, not only is he an awesome human being, but the guy is immensely talented, and he's just been waiting. He's been waiting for the right opportunity. He has deep roots in Seattle. I know it was really hard for him to leave, to go take it. And the Miami opportunity is a really exciting opportunity. And so we absolutely wish him the best. And I think he's going to be great. In terms of replacing him, we're going to have to do a couple different things. We have underneath him, we have Sean Henderson, his little brother, who is our scouting manager. And so the good thing is, a lot of times when these guys leave, who are picking your talent, it's really like, it's like a real estate agent that leaves and takes their book of business. And you're like, oh man, what do we just lost our network. What do we do now? So the good news is though, Sean, because he was our scouting manager, we have all the infrastructure. We haven't lost any of the reporting. We haven't lost any of the relationships. Those are all managed at that level from an infrastructure perspective. The other thing we're pretty good at is analytics. And Robbie Remenini has been a big part of our player identification, for the last couple of years, certainly since I've been here. So we still have those two pieces, right? We still have some help with the salary cap, from Robbie, we have other support. So it's not like we have to fill this giant hole all at once. Part of the solution from a good management perspective is, hey, let's see how much more Sean can do, and let's see how much more Robbie can do. And then let's bring in somebody who's really outstanding to replace Chris. And again, like as we've talked about thematically, what's the one area where maybe we know we need to do better? Player development, right? So now can you get somebody in who's maybe done the job before, maybe picked some players, but has experience in player development? And, can you look at somebody now who has a different skill set than Chris, but maybe is it a complement to the folks that we have in place, and allows us then to kind of get better at a couple of other different things.
Can I ask you a more general question just based on what you said about Chris and his ability as a talent evaluator? what is important, and this is a very general sense, it could be about Chris, it could be about anybody who is good at this. What are the important things to think about, the attributes to have, the processes, whatever it might be, to be an effective talent evaluator in MLS terms? Because in so many ways, this feels like, it's like speculation, right? Like you're just, you're making educated bets, and we know, watching, talking about, thinking about this league, that some pay off, many do, but equal or more do not. What does it take to be good at that job?
I'm going to give you the answer I hate first, which is you got to have it, and you recognize it when you see it. Well, here's what I mean, though, more constructively, right? Because somebody's just, you know, lots of people can watch games, right? But there's a real talent to evaluating who is the best fit for MLS. So like all of us, right? We could all watch an NFL game and be like, hey, you know, that Patrick Mahomes guy is pretty good. Brady on the other side, he looks all right too, right? But we would have no idea about what the salary cap implications are and how to fit within the team structure and things like that. So, you know, any good talent evaluator in MLS has to understand the structure, right? And you know, you have to have that at the foundation, but you also have to have the high end of, can you not only identify, but recruit the best players, right? Like when you're signing Nico Ladero, when you're signing Raul Ruiz Diaz, Chris was our guy on the ground. I mean, he was our guy going in person, meeting these folks, having the relationships with clubs, having the relationships with national teams, having the relationships with agents, to say, hey, you know, Seattle's a pretty cool place. You know, if you like me, you're probably going to like our club. And that's a big part of it. And that's something that is also a difficult place. But so answer your question, Andrew, is you got to understand, you got to have those relationships. You obviously got to be able to watch the video and pick the talent. But you also have to understand the structure of the league. And again, hopefully it's actually a couple of people working collaboratively to fill in all of those parts all of the time, right? I mean, I think one of the hardest things for a foreign GM in our league is how do you identify the $150,000 to $200,000 domestic player that has to play 1,000 minutes for you to make the playoffs? Like that's because, again, in the era of expansion, right? Like we've increased the spending as a league, right? But the number of foreign spots has remained static. So you have to have X number of domestic guys and they have to produce. And like one way over time is to have academies and player development and stuff like that. But, you know, fundamentally, you got to get right your choices as to what those pieces are. And like, and I'll go back to 2018 and say, having a player like Harry Shipp on our team, you know, when we had the best second half in MLS history, right? And everyone's like, well, who is your starting lineup? Like, who are the big players? All that stuff, right? And Harry Shipp started almost every game for us in that stretch. And, you know, Harry Shipp was a really reliable, steady player for us for a long time. But he's nobody's version of an all-star, right? And that's the guy you got to get. The Will Bruin, somebody scored 73 goals or 70. I don't know how many it's been now, but scored a whole bunch of goals. You know, can he come in and can he compliment Raul? Can he spell Raul? And I'm inevitably going to leave some guys out. Shane O'Neill was awesome for us last year, you know, in that domestic role. And again, we're going to have a signing later in the week that we think is going to help us domestically. And Madranda's in this vein. And so, you know, you have to have those guys. That's still the guts of your team. Jordy Delem is another one that's done well for us. You know, and now what you have to hope is what those guys give you is the floor. So, you know, if you put them in, you're going to get a certain, hopefully league average performance. And then what you want is for your kids to have a higher ceiling. And now you're challenging the kids, and then hopefully the best ones are pushing through, and now you're raising the ceiling of the team. But in the meantime, you don't have this terrifying, you know, jumping out of a plane without a parachute feeling of what happens if somebody gets hurt or this doesn't work out.
Tell me a little bit more about the Jordan Morris situation from your seat. Because I'm trying to watch the Swansea game the other day, and I'm like, oh, it's not on ESPN Plus, so I'm following it on the, you know, the live Google box score, and I'm just waiting for that little green arrow on Jordan Morris's name. But I don't have, I mean, this, my stakes in it are pretty low.
I would say, but if you run a soccer team, you probably get all that good scouting network feed. So Garth's got the Swansea game on the big screen.
Y-Scout coming straight in. How will you experience these games for Jordan as you weigh all of this that we've talked about, which is constructing the best MLS team that you can, whether that be with Jordan or with the allocation money that his performance would inevitably bring? Like, what do you want to happen? What's the best case scenario?
Again, this is going to sound terribly cliche, but I want what Jordan wants. I want what's best for Jordan, because the best thing for us in the long term is to be a player-centric, player-friendly organization. You know, and you see this again in all sports, right? What does the Deshaun Watson thing come down to with the Texans? It's you have this awesome player, but if he basically boycotts you, then you're out of luck, you know, and it's going to, you know, when you trade DeAndre Hopkins, what is the impact of that on Deshaun Watson, right? And so this sounds goofy a little bit, I know, but like the culture really matters here. The how matters. How do we send Jordan off? How do we support him? How are we, you know, I want to both root for Jordan and root for his success and then come to him at the end of the 4 or 5 months and say, all right, man, what do you want to do? And we're going to support you either way. And look, does that make it more complicated for us in the short term? Yes, absolutely. But that's literally my job, right? Like that's my problem. I have to solve that, and we will, right? And it's more work because you have to have two or three different decision trees, and you got to have, you know, guys lined up. If he does this, if he does this, if he does this, so it's a lot more work. But again, long term, just as playing young players in your first team impacts your recruitment to your academy of 14 and 15 year olds from all over the country, how we treat Jordan, how we are able to move into this global transfer market, that's going to impact everybody that comes after him. So that's really what we're cognizant of. And again, if you look out at the landscape of MLS and you say new TV deal coming, World Cup coming to American, Canadian, Mexican shores, there's such an opportunity here for our league to grow. That again, I think it's just, we to not just look at what are the decisions we're making for today, we set our culture up for if this league gets really, really good and really does try to take on the top 4 or 5 leagues in the world. Now, again, that's not going to happen next year. It's not going to happen next week. But again, what's the point of doing this unless that's the aspiration, right? I mean, there is no, you know, otherwise, why wouldn't all the GMs pick up and try to get a, you know, we've seen all the GM CSOs coming from foreign countries and running teams here. And so far, you haven't seen a lot of our domestic guys go there. And I think part of it is it's this shared idea that we are all in a really good place to capitalize on what could still be electric growth in MLS. And that's still really exciting. And Jordan Morris playing potentially in the Premier League. Yes, that's exciting. And you know, Andrew, to answer your question, I very rarely watch one game or because the outcome of that game or that 20 minutes, as much as I'm into that as a fan, as a GM, it doesn't matter. What matters is what happens over 10 games and 15 games and 20 games. And again, it's not just what happens with Jordan, but it's what happens with Pulisic and what happens with McKinney and, you know, all of those macro forces. What happens with a pandemic? You know, for my chair, those things matter a lot more, and those are not going to be decided on any particular Saturday.
Now, I'm just feeling terrible right now about my own life in some ways. I don't have a single decision tree. I don't have a single decision tree built, made, thought of, ideated. I'm just out here winging it, man. And that's my personal life. Whereas on your job, I'm sure your personal life's got a lot of decision trees, but I got some work to do. I got to tell you that.
Now, reminder, in years that the Bears make the playoffs, bring your NFL trading cards because Garth's going to make every reference back to an NFL. But on good years, not on bad years.
Hey, you know, look, if you look at for the Bears over the last decade, man, if you make the playoffs 2 out of 3 years, even with a losing record, which to be clear, we did, and we're completely outclassed in against every good team we played, you know, you got to look at the silver lining.
I'll shoot you a text and tell you what it's like to watch Patrick Mahomes, in a Super Bowl, just to let you know. Garth.
It's better when you see Deshaun Watson on the trade market, and you're like, we could undo this, and you're like, oh, wait, but we don't have any assets, so we couldn't get him anyway. Like, that's really what.
Maybe they want Jordan Morris. Maybe that's the move.
Should have offered him on loan. It could have been a great opportunity. Thank you. Garth, we could do this for hours, but unfortunately, producer Anders, through some reasoning for a Seattle Sounders fan, says to wrap it up. So we're wrapping it up. We appreciate your time, man. Until the next time.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys.
Big thanks to Garth Lagerwey for joining us here on Extra Time. Always enjoy his opinions, his sense of humor. And everything he does with the Sounders makes this league interesting. All right, our transfer rumor of the week. Dun, dun, dun. Got some good options here. Jovinko to LA Galaxy, reported by Nicholo Shira, who's also reporting Brian Reynolds and Roma News. I don't know who that is, but I do know that they have 120,000 followers. So that seems legit.
I suspect, you know, it's pretty easy to get 120,000 followers just, you know, making up transfer rumors.
Beep, 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 beep. Was that the BS meter? Was the BS meter going off, you think?
Yeah. My BS meter is going off on this one.
All right, how about this? Let's just think through it. Sebastian Jovinko, he just turned 34. Absolute legend in this league. But no goals in 9 games this season, according to Purdue and Anders' research. 7 goals in his last 35. I don't think you can – you can't do DP because also you're LA and your DP spots are taken, assuming you're going to bring back Christian Pavone, right? No, it's Chicharito Pavone and Jonathan Dos Santos?
Dos Santos.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Not, you would not.
This is not a DP even close. This is like Ashley Cole, oh, you want to live in LA? You want to play for Greg again? It's your – you're welcome.
No, he wouldn't even play. Vanny has said for years he wants to play with wingers. He wants to play either a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3. And you can't have Jovinko on the field at the same time as a winger. You just can't do it. They tried it for years in Italy. They probably tried it in Saudi Arabia. They didn't even bother with it in Toronto because he's the second forward. It's the only position he can play. Like, it doesn't make any sense as a fit in terms of.
Oh, by the way, whose phone is? Oh, I was gonna say that sounded like I was in an office in the 1980s. Like,
It doesn't make any sense in terms of the fit on the field. It doesn't make any sense in terms of the fit in the locker room. Just in terms of Jovinko's age. Like, he's 34 years old. His best years are well behind him. You know the Galaxy want to get younger and try to rebuild and become a super relevant team in this league again, something they haven't been since before the TAM era. So the BS meter is going off. And I'm just begging you, Weeby, you don't have to do this.
Okay, I'll stop. I won't do it. It's never again. Okay. Honestly, we should just go cut the buzzer from Dave's apartment, and that will be our new BS meter because it popped up. It went off. It's like the old radiator. Like, clearly BS. Sebastian Jovinko to the Galaxy.
I think in Megan's attempt to make it not go off in the show, she went downstairs but didn't get there in time.
Pass the buck.
We get buzzed. So we're the top buzzer. So we get buzzed 15 times a day because any person who brings a package, they just hit the top buzzer. And it goes
That's perfect for this time of year and the transfer rumors and the BS meter. How about this? We killed that one. Doyle summarily took it down while you were gone. Jamintin Campaz to either Columbus or Charlotte. We don't know which. That's just, you know, either one. It started with the C. And so, boom, we're linking the Tolima man.
And if you think about how similar the teams are, you've got one of the oldest teams in MLS who just won MLS Cup. And a team that doesn't technically play for another year. So they're very similar. It's pretty
easy
much just plug and play.
Yeah, easy, you know, look.
Yeah. Although my favorite part about this was the comments, which was all Cincinnati fans being like, could it have been us? Are we the
Yeah, did you? Are you sure you didn't mean Cincinnati? I hope it was us. I hope it was us. Speaking of Cincinnati, Jordan Eichamp was talking this morning about their offseason timeline right now. He says he sees the questions all the time, social media and press conferences. They have to find the right players to fit the roster, he says, to be a winning team. He says they're on the right track. Priorities, a number 10, winger, center back, a number 9. A lot of players on the market. It's an advantage to us, he says, when the European window closes but ours stays open. I'm very positive about it. Read between the lines on that one, Cincinnati fans, however you will. But still, just one starter for the team that finished dead last in 2020. Got a work to do. A lot of work to do. So, let's keep it rolling. How about this one?
I think they're just going to promote through the academy, Weebs. I think they just got young players are going to promote through the academy. So they can just
Cincinnati?
Fill spots that way.
Mm.
Yeah.
That'll work out. That'll work out. Mateus Almeida is leaving to coach the Chilean national team. Think that's BS? Feels like BS. Might be BS?
Feels like
BS. A lot of links to me.
Feels like... I mean, so Chile has had a really good decade, but if you look at the kids coming up for them, it's not an impressive crop. Like, their golden generation is done, and it is going to be an unforgiving job for the next 5 years. And while I don't doubt that Almeida will at some point move on from the Quakes, and at some point will probably manage a full national team in South America, I don't think it'll be... I don't think it'll be now. Not after they went out and got him, you know, his number 10. Not after he's finally been able to really make over the roster in San Jose. So yeah, the BS meter. I'm waiting for Gas's doorbell to ring again because I think my BS meter.
Yeah, for sure. That one's gonna be a good agent stuff.
I don't know about yet. I don't know that. I don't think the buzzer's going off. I think I'm not saying it's gonna happen, but I think that one might have legs.
I'm sure there's interest, but I don't think the Chile job is attractive right now.
But it's the starter national team job now in South America because they roll through a coach every year. And then
you
get to be Colombia's coach. So you get to be Ecuador.
So start it in 2023. Don't start it now when they're about to get just destroyed in qualifying.
Red Bull's busy reporting from The Athletic that Caden Clark is headed after this year. Treble Leipzig, nobody's jaw is going to drop on this one. Like, this was basically the writing on the wall from the very, very beginning. There's also reports out there that Kaku.
Didn't we say that on this show like 5 months
ago?
Yeah,
you did.
You said that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So, but it was breaking news this week?
No, they did link to you in the article, though. I will say they did give you the proper credit in that sense.
Right at the top.
Oh, it was a little bit of kind of far down. Kind of far down, yeah.
Maybe.
It was a little far down. Kaku reportedly sold.
To be fair, actually, though, shout out to JJ at Once a Metro, who actually had that info for.
Look at that. Whoa, just coming right back to it. Kaku reportedly sold, and then they went and got a new right back on loan, Tom Edwards from Stoke City. That is where Kyle Duncan plays.
And a Venezuelan midfielder.
Can't play D-mid. Oh, no, the Venezuelan midfielder. So what's going on with the Rebels?
Yeah.
What do we want to talk about? Is Clark worth talking about, or is that just so obvious that we gloss right back over it?
I mean, we've already talked about it. It's interesting, though, because if Kaku's gone and they play the 4-4-2 diamond, which has been Struber's preferred formation, I think Clark is the 10, right, David?
Yeah. I think Omir is in that category as well. And I don't know what he's going to do with Velo. I think Velo
is a shuttler. I think Velo is really good as a shuttler.
It'd be a fun year for Caden Clark. Good thing to do with your asset as well.
And it was kind of how he played, obviously. Ooh. Red Bulls too, right there. That's how he played for them. As a 10, high pressing, active system, kind of like connecting all over the field.
We're unceremoniously saying goodbye if this is the end of Kaku in a lot of ways. Is that befitting his time in MLS? What is that indicative of? Because when he signed, this was a big signing. This was a statement of intent by the Red Bulls that the intent never, there were flashes, don't get me wrong. There were some real flashes. Never quite paid off.
He had a great half season. His first half season in 2018, I think at one point he was like on pace to have 20 assists in a year, and he looked. He was never like completely dominant two way number 10 like Nico Ladero, but he was able to break some games open. And once Jesse Marsh left, it never quite worked for him again. But even with Jesse there, it wasn't perfect. Because if you remember, going back to that CONCACAF Champions League semifinal against Chivas, Kaku didn't start. And I think it was telling in retrospect that in that series, for as big as those games were, the manager who brought him in didn't see him as a starter. So I think he was just an underwhelming signing. And the hope for the Red Bulls is that whoever the next number 10 is, whether it's Caden Clark or whether they go out and get someone from overseas, that they end up delivering more than Kaku did.
But if you're looking at it from a long-term picture for New York, Gonzalo Verón was worse. Kaku was half season better. So the next one's just going to nail it. One big season at least, if not two.
Okay. I do want to talk to Struber. I want to have him on the show. I want to hear from him ourselves. So we're going to effort to make that happen as well. Here's some other rumors, reports, things that are maybe happening out there. Brian Rodriguez might have gone, we're South American radio here, might have gone on Uruguayan radio and said he wants to go to Europe and his representatives are working on it right now. That's what a tweet said that said audio said it. I listened to the audio. I was not able to. My Spanish is not as good as yours, Matt. Pick up whether that was Brian Rodriguez and what they were saying, but it makes sense that he would want to go. This has always seemed to be sort of his singular mindset and where the rumors were. Tomas Pochettino from Tijuana to Austin FC. 2.8-ish. Doesn't really seem like a pure 10, but I think we also said on the show we thought they might play that way. So their opening lineup's looking pretty salty to me. I like it. I have faith.
Yeah, absolutely. They also, they've used like no international roster spots to get this done, and they still have probably two DP spots open. It doesn't sound like Pochettino would be a DP if you didn't want to. So there's a ton of work still left to do. I just think their baseline's already so high that they can kind of take risks or do what they need to. And they don't have to get everything done by the time you kick off, right? You can get a big deal done in the summer if that's easier and still be on pretty good footing to make the playoffs.
On the Brian Rodriguez stuff, Doyle, I'm just sort of speaking out loud here and trying to think through it. I don't really...
You're speaking out loud?
Yeah, okay, thank you.
We'd prefer if you spoke to yourself and thought out
loud. All right, let me mime this for you and see if you can pick it up. That maybe this is more like, sell me in the summer, I'm telling you that right now, and putting pressure on you, because it's hard for me to imagine a deal gets done in the time that it would need to get done for a number that LAFC would want, given so much uncertainty.
That sounds correct, but I think it's also probably correct that there has been interest in this guy for so long, and LAFC have been probably diligently keeping multiple irons in the fire for him and Rossi and Atuesta and maybe Blessing and, you know, who, maybe Segura as well. So it could come out an hour after the show that they sold this guy for $12 million.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I would not be surprised at all.
That's fair. All right, let's get the mailbag. 401-206-0MLS, extratime@mlssoccer.com. If you see a rumor that you want us to debunk or discuss, let us know. Any topic is welcome in these hallowed halls. MLS Super Cup or the Cup Winners' Cup. Somebody on Reddit was writing about this. I thought it was awesome. It was Eli Tron. What would you guys think of having a Cup Winners' Cup like other countries? I'm thinking a single elimination tournament contested between the Eastern Conference champs, Western Conference champs, Supporters' Shield winners, and Open Cup winners. I think it would be entertaining since there's a lot of debate over the importance of those competitions. That feels like a lot to me. Mm-hmm. Four games. I could see there being like an every year preseason tournament if you wanted to make this a little bit bigger, sort of like MLS is back, but probably toned down a little bit, maybe single elimination in some way. But again, teams are not in the same spots, so it's hard to have a prolonged, you know, competition like that. But what about a single game? If there was going to be a single game that was like the Super Cup ahead of the season, what would you want it to be, and how could it not be Leagues Cup, Campeones Cup head-to-head?
Yeah, I was going to make the Campeones Cup joke. I would be like, it would be the MLS Cup winner against the Campeón de Campeones winner, and they could call it the Campeones Cup. I just think that's the direction it's all heading. The first Campeones Cup, it was okay. Tigres kind of smashed Toronto. The second Campeones Cup, in that Atlanta versus Club America game, that was one of the best games of 2019. That game was awesome. And so I think there's a lot of juice there already, and I feel like the listeners should have figured out at this point, when they're spitballing ideas like this, the ideas should be aimed at MLS versus Liga MX sort of interleague competition rather than intraleague within MLS.
The opportunities.
I'd also like to point out that for Club America to get into that game, they actually already won the Campeón de Campeones at the LA Galaxy Stadium. So there's already a Campeón de Campeones that goes into Campeones Cup. So you just need a third name for this winner.
I'm here for it. This is the League's Cup of discussions right now. Oh, God, I love the League's Cup. Kyle Scoble, if one team's stock was undervalued right now, I'm going to start that over. You're better at this, Dave. If one team's stock was undervalued right now, that 6 months from now, everyone will be bandwagoning, who would it be? Who's down now, but we will be up like late summer?
Boy,
that's an interesting question.
If we knew that.
Yeah, I'm trying to think who's down. Like, so who's down now? How about that?
So I have two that stand out to me. I think FC Dallas, I don't know if people are down on them specifically, but I think they've made the right moves to maintain a level, and there's internal improvement that can happen that can take them above what they were last year, plus the moves they've made. And I'm going to say Montreal, because I think everyone's down on Montreal, and they're going to be young, and they're going to be hungry, and they're going to be scrappy. And I think Henri is going to get that ethos out of them, and they're just going to be fun to play, and they're just going to kind of try and smack you against the wall every time you step into their stadium. And I think they could be more competitive than people expect.
Vancouver's been a team we've talked about a lot, so maybe we've unwittingly pushed that stock straight up.
They're number 10 away from having a decent-looking first 11. You know, it's the question I have with Vancouver is can Mark Dos Santos stick with the same approach every, because like if you watch them every week, it was something different in terms of formation, in terms of where they drew their line of confrontation, whether they were pressing, whether they're mid block, whether they're low block. It was just chaos. And that, like, that has to end. Like, just be good at playing a 4-2-3-1. Get that part down first, and then you can start tinkering around a little bit, which is why I would be shorting Vancouver.
I'm going to throw out a couple here. I think Red Bulls, maybe they're not, quote,
maybe not the name of the league.
Come on, dude. You name two. Let me name two. If you name two, I get to name two. You set the precedent. I was going to throw the Red Bulls out there. I'm not saying people are down on them, but maybe thinking that their sort of like ability to contend is not there, which very well could be true, but maybe Struber has some magic sauce here that he can put in there. And then I think if they're good, and I'm not saying they will be, but if they are, everybody will get on this bandwagon.
LA Galaxy.
Wasn't going to say that. Wasn't going to say that. It was going to be that's the opposite. If they're good, everybody's going to hate it. And then I'll revel in that hate and it'll be fun. I was going to say RSL. I was going to say if RSL have any success at all, if they do even like kind of what the Colorado Rapids did to a lesser extent 2 years ago, where it was just misery and then positivity, I'll speak for myself. I will love it and I will hype that bandwagon. So I hope something good happens for them. All right, let's keep it rolling here. Egg Saladino, 'tis the season to hear that young players are trialing at various and sundry overseas clubs. Where would you most want to send your 18-year-old self to go and play soccer for a few weeks? We'll start with our resident travel expert here, who I'm sure will combine the availability of hummus with his destination.
What is this MLS style where I go in January? Is that the climate timing?
Probably. It's okay. Probably, you know, all the FC Dallas kids at Bayern who are standing around with Dallas scarves.
I don't think Germany would be on
Probably not.
I always kind of chuckled at that when, like, because remember Omar and Chad Marshall and all those guys went that 1 year and it was like,
I got to go to Nuremberg. Really need to get to Nuremberg in January.
I think if I'm putting in the soccer part as well, right, because I want to go to a league that's considered strong and play for that team, Malaga probably has a pretty high spot on the list. Just be on the Mediterranean.
It's a good Phoenician city, my friend. A very good Phoenician city.
I made Moroccan lentils myself this week. Doesn't hit the way you want it to. So I think Malaga might be pretty high on that list. Otherwise, any team in Rio. And I'll just play in the Brazilian league. It's the best league in South America.
Yeah, that's outside the box. I like that.
So is the question, if you were 18 right now,
no.
Or is the question you get in it? So I have to go back.
I say you go back. I say you're going back.
1994.
Wait, so Doyle, can you fly or do you have to take a steamliner across
the
Oh,
Cretaceous,
man.
Jurassic.
Thank you. No. Thank you, boys. I appreciate it.
Doyle, can I just say, I think if we're doing that, you have to go to a Serie A team, right?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Right? It would be the one. Play with Batigol. That would be.
Can you imagine being a young soccer player living in Florence? That's unreal.
Yeah. That would be the one. The other one that I was thinking from that era, obviously, was Ajax. That was like the last Ajax. They won Champions League in 95, and that was Davids and Kluivert, and the list of great players out of that era was pretty long. And of course, 2 years after the time frame we're talking about is when John O'Brien got there. So they were open to having Americans. So now they would be really, really disappointed when they saw me play soccer. But that's where it's probably one of those two for 18-year-old me.
So I'm trying to figure this out.
I'm
currently
places?
Waiting for the Nicholas Bentner. Yeah, I'm just trying to see where Nicholas Bentner was when I was 18. Oh, so yeah, no, I'm following Kalen Carr's footsteps. I'm going to Arsenal, and I'm going to spend some quality time in London with Nicholas Bentner. Prime early days Nicholas Bentner. That's what I'm doing as an 18-year-old. Just to, you know,
I think you'd get to hang out with Carlos Vela. Probably.
That's what I'm saying. I get a lot of different experiences there.
Probably get us an interview now. 20 years later.
There you go. I'd just be calling on my boy. Like, all right, what else we got here? What else we got here, Dave?
I just wanted to see Carlos Vela be like, who, Andrew? No.
Andres?
Jorge in Miami followed up to his own hot take hotline text that he sent us, I guess before. Oh, he sent this in January of 2018. And he said, we laughed at it at the idea, but how much would he have helped last year? And what are the chances Ozzy Alonso ends up in Miami now that Chris Henderson is here?
I mean,
Aussies are free.
That feels like a match made in, feels like a decent match, you know, right? Like,
yeah. I mean, it feels like a good match in terms of what they need and what Ozzy's done, and obviously the huge Cuban expat community in Miami, and the Chris Henderson, Ozzy Alonso connection. But if I'm Minnesota United, I'm doing everything I can to bring Ozzy back, because I think even though you can't expect him to play 3,000 minutes, if you can get 1,500 minutes out of him and make sure a chunk of those are during the playoffs, that's your best shot at getting through the rest of the Western Conference and into MLS Cup.
I hate to bring it to you, Minnesota supporters, but you know what that means. When one of us says that this has to happen, that Minnesota and this player were meant to be together,
that's it.
Bienvenido a Miami.
The bell tolls.
Jose Alonso. He's going to be having some cafecitos. He's good. He's like, Miami? Minnesota? I'll see you in Miami.
Yeah,
I'll see you in Miami, sure. All right? That's where I'll end up.
He'll do the first half of the year in Miami.
Exactly. A little snowbird action here.
Here's one we got. It is, what U20 player signed to an MLS club today will have the most goals and assists in their MLS career? I.e., Pepe's unbelievable, but he probably won't stay in MLS for long. So to stuff the box score, he won't be able to do it that much. And he gave two picks for himself. Do you want those to kind of give you some time?
Yeah, I'll take them.
So Griffin Yao and Tyler Freeman at SKC, who are both players that you expect to be goal scoring e attacking players, as well as putting in the, you know, maybe they won't go to Europe and they'll stay in for.
So those are good calls, but you also have to think of it as, and I think he probably did in this regard, but you have to think of it as like, who is a team that is not automatically going to go out and buy a $10 million attacker to play that role. So Yao actually makes good sense, because I think he will score some goals if he can win a starting winger job for DC, but I'm not sure his ceiling is so high that he's going to have to move to Europe for like $5 or $6 million. I haven't seen enough of Freeman. I know he scored a lot in USL, right?
Yeah. No. Yeah, he scored a lot of goals, played as a center forward. They also put him on the side of a 4-3-3
The Sporting go out and they import attackers. That's the thing. Yeah. Is he ever going to get a shot to nail down a job? I don't know.
Do you think a guy like Fontana is Europe bound, or is he a guy who hangs around?
That's a really good show, but he's not a U20. I think he turns 22 this year.
Yeah, he is barely over the 22 under 22. Margin right now. It's like a couple months. It's 2 months. I still put him on my list that I'm rooting for with a caveat. I felt I owed that to Charlie. But the question is, how long does he get to hold that spot down? I guess they could put him on a wing. I guess they could move him around a little bit if he proves that he can be productive. I mean, it's hard. It's hard to understand, especially in the TAM era, to go back to that. It's hard to know who will be in a position to hold down that spot long-term. If you got one, let us know. I would love to hear from the folks out there. Ethan Zubak, for whatever reason, was jumping up in my mind. Like, maybe he's not in that U20 camp as well. That must make it hard. We haven't seen a ton of those guys at this point. What else we got?
Okay, there you go. There's your answers. Eric, who says, great stuff as always, but I have to weigh in on the Kansas City, Missouri opening. I am as qualified to weigh in as anyone, which isn't very much. I was born in Kansas City, Missouri, but lived in Kansas. I feel like I'm a man of both states, but mostly of Kansas City. I got married in Italy, and during the wedding, the Italians addressed me as Eric of Kansas City. So either say from Kansas City or go back to New York, New York. That's where Goss and Doyle live, and you should keep states.
I actually think this is the most salient, logical email and thought we've had on this topic since I started doing a different intro. And I am going to take this advice, Eric, and I believe that you have more credibility and you're more qualified than you have led us to believe here. And I think, from New York, New York, and, you know, kind of I'm thinking like Kansas City, here I come. Kansas City, I'll find a cadence here that works, but I'm taking your advice, Eric. We're going this route.
All right, there we go. It's finally solved. David in Wisconsin, he says, cheers from snowy Wisconsin ETR crew. After yesterday's Serie A, almost actually Coppa Italia, but we'll let it go, bout of the century between Zlatan and Lukaku, it got me thinking, who would be the MLS version of this striker versus striker heavyweight title fight? Obviously, this would be streamed on all of the Extra Time channels, so we would be a major part of this. Who do you want to see face off?
Ah, man. Even just in the, like, Well, first of all, if the reports are true about what Zlatan may have said, that is completely unacceptable, and I just want to start with that. But from
also secondary, Lukaku went off in about five languages when angry, which is the coolest thing a person mm-hmm. can do.
Well, we already have the
and he scored a filthy.
Yeah, we already have the Gooch side of this. I'm trying to think. I'm just trying to think who sort of has a little bit of petulance on the field.
So I think.
Because this is a personality thing. Doesn't just happen to you. You know what I mean? It doesn't just, like, you are a person that enters into some arguments, that considers yourself somebody who isn't going to back down. I don't know. I'm trying to think of guys who embody that. In some ways, he doesn't have the size, but Josef Martínez certainly embodies that. I'm just like, I'm not going to take it. Like, let's go right here, right now.
I know it's not in the same way, but Wando's on this list somewhere. I mean, he's screaming everywhere. True. At some point, someone has to be offended.
Honestly, I'm trying to think about this, and all that's going through my brain are the images from Toronto and Tyler Adams and Josie and Sasha and the club in the back and like the pushing and the shoving. And so that's where my mind goes, but I can't think of anybody right now. All right, anything else we got to finish this off before we get out of here?
Can I just say the best part about that Toronto Red Bull tussle was I could hear what was happening, and someone basically said the equivalent of, you don't even go here, as they're like, what are you doing here? And I was like, whoa, I could be a professional soccer player. This is what I say when I'm in arguments with people. We have a fan who's very excited because in the Premier League this week, Leeds and Newcastle played and Miguel Marón scored for the Magpies. Jack Harrison got the game winner for Leeds. Two former MLS players scoring against each other in the EPL. Is this a first? I don't know if anyone has.
I'm trying to think. I mean, you'd have to think that the question would be who would have scored opposite Dempsey? Maybe Boca, because he scored a decent number of goals. Maybe back in the day with McBride. But I'm trying to think. You have to think of guys who have scored. Yeah. Who would the American have been that scored on the other? Or not the American. I guess it's MLS product, because these aren't Americans.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sean Bartlett scored a bunch in the Premier League.
Would Ryan Nelson have gotten?
I don't think he scored many.
Yeah, it's like once in a blue moon on that one. Yeah. I don't know.
That's actually a good question.
Our history, we're like digging through history unsuccessfully. But I'm going to guess that there's probably not that occasion, but somebody will find it and send it to us. So it's good to see them both score. I think Jack Harrison is one of those guys that we maybe don't talk about enough. Like his rise from NYCFC to where he is and how he impacts the Premier League and Leeds now. I mean, it's been pretty incredible because the start wasn't that seamless in the championship with him. You look back on the decision to trade for Jack Harrison by NYCFC. I mean, the fire had already taken him to trade for him. And that looks like a pretty smart decision in retrospect, but.
Okay. Were you ready for our final?
I'm sorry. I don't know where I was taking us there.
We talked about serotonin moments last time, and then we got into it on Twitter as well. Weeby put up a picture. Oh, of himself.
I was hoping you weren't going to go there.
And this, Doyle, have you seen this picture?
Oh my God, yeah.
It is wild. I saw it because Weeby tagged me in the post, whatever. I look at it, I go, I knew Andrew in 2014. I couldn't believe he would be taking that picture. Like, how tucked in could his pants have possibly been?
So this is a classic case of the memory overtaking your ability to see the truth in a photo. And the memory was so beautiful and amazing. The photo is after the first game of the 2014 World Cup in Sao Paulo after Brazil and Croatia played. And it's this incredible occasion. And I just like, you know, it's a serotonin moment for me. I felt full, man. And I had Nick Firshaw take that photo. That's a lesson for you out there, everybody listening. If you have a special moment or something you want to remember, make sure you have a quote-unquote producer and make sure you pause before that photo is taken and while it's being taken and remind yourself of a few things. One, if you're wearing a backpack, take that backpack off because you're going to look like a complete goober loser. Also, if you're for whatever reason, whether you're at a conference or you're a journalist at a soccer game, take your credential off. Nobody cares. It doesn't look cool. You look dumb. Posture, extremely important. Get those shoulders back. Because if you have that little bit of a hunch, people are going to call you a middle school boy asking for a dance on the internet. And it, you know, I wouldn't say it hurt, but I was cackling.
And my theory is you are in an effort in a big moment at a World Cup, probably your first to look professional.
Correct.
You went with the button down tucked. I swear... I knew you at that point for like almost a year, and I've known you since. And I don't know that I've ever seen you tuck your shirt in besides this.
a lot of questionable decisions happened there. All right, let's get through these other.
You and the referee both had.
What other serotonin moments we got?
David Sutherland says, hello, wonderful people of Extra Time. My name's David. I'm a Dynamo fan who attends NYU, so greatest city in the world. Here's my favorite story. February 26, 2019. It's a rainy night in Houston, Texas, which will play host to the second leg of a CCL round of 16 match between the Dynamo and CD Guastatoya. My friend I had looked forward to this since the moment we won Open Cup the year prior, which we were at. But as usual, Houston weather would not let life go on easily. Originally meant to kick off around 7. The game got delayed and delayed and delayed. We started to question if the game was even going to be played. Then the announcement comes out that the game will be played over the loudspeaker. We're back in our seats after the extra 3 hours of anticipation. We finally got to watch the Dynamo represent MLS at home. In the 72nd minute, all went wrong. Guastatoya somehow scored, meaning it was 1-1 on aggregate, and we all know anything can happen on this continent. The worst thoughts started coming through how I would react if someone we lost to a Guatemalan team that it isn't even verified on Twitter. 5 minutes later, however, as he had done so much before, Mauro Menotti played hero for our men in orange. We're up 2-1 on aggregate with 13 minutes to go and a mix of exhaustion since it was almost midnight and I'd woken up at 5:30 a.m. that day. Elation of probably going through to the quarterfinals and having to worry a bit less about losing. It caused me to react like this, and we will put this out on Twitter. This is an unreal GIF.
Wait.
Of this GIF celebrating. Sorry,
whatever. GIF
of this guy celebrating in the crowd. Dynamo go on to win the game 2-1 and advance 3-1 on aggregate. However, the story doesn't end there. The next day, I get a message in my Dynamo fan group chat from the official Twitter account, and it's that GIF. I didn't know I'd reacted in that way. I guess in the moment, I'd lost all control of my body, and then that GIF went viral for thousands of fans. I miss those CCL nights, and I think all of us do. Nothing better than some crazy soccer on a random weekend.
It's nice when you become a reaction GIF for your favorite soccer team.
Yeah, it's like, awesome.
It's kind of like a charming little story.
Yeah, and honestly, I hear that story and I smile throughout it, and I'm like, I love that, and I'm like, these are my people, man. That wake up at 5:30, that go to a CCL game, that don't leave when it rains for hours, that know who that Guatemalan team is, that are jacked up about the opportunity, that were at the Open Cup game 6 months before, that celebrated that one like it was the huge deal that it was for the Houston Dynamo, and then went and had themselves immortalized in a GIF, or however the hell you say that.
I gotta ask you, though, do we think it's good radio to tell a five-minute story about a GIF?
I think the story is about CCL and the beauty and love that it has that brings our community together.
And on that note, we will see you next week, everybody. Thank you so much for Garth Lagerwey for joining us and for you sticking along as we talk about soccer twice a week. We'll see you on Monday. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll be right back.